So Toby, I think you picked a not that you picked it, but unfortunately circumstances dictate that the Gemara we are about to learn, you basically have to be here from the beginning to the end to really get the entire thing, because I think I tried warning us. You know, we're in the major leagues now. We're in the third chapter of Makos. In the third chapter of Makos, there's certain Gemaras actually this week and next week are going to be very intense in terms of drasha. So I want to show you what I made over here. When I was going through the Gemara, I had to chart everything out over here to make sure I knew what was going on. You could just get a sense of what I had to do just to understand the basic flow of the Gemara. I have not had to do that yet, but Yudalam and Aleph and Yudalam and Beis, we're on 14a, and then next week 14b. There's a lot of charting out that needs to be done, and I'm going to do my best to explain what's going on. I mean, essentially, the reason this Gemara, the Gemara itself actually, the concepts are rather straightforward. But what we are about to see this week is essentially, you see this in Gemaras many times, where one rabbi who has a unique position, well, where do you get that unique position from? Oh, he derived it from an inference from an extra word in that verse. Oh, well, those who disagree with him and don't make that inference from that verse, what do they do with that extra word? They use it for that. Oh, well, what does the other opinion do with that? You know, where's he learn that idea from? And so the Gemara is going to rebound back and forth, kind of like in this little fencing match of where someone procures a source and someone else has to explain what they do with that source instead. So, and it's going to be a ping pong match back and forth throughout the Gemara. The actual ideas, the actual hermeneutics and the derivations from the psukim are mostly straightforward, but essentially it's a cheshbon that one just needs to try to keep. I think in Yeshiva say you got a whole cup. You got to hold on to the cheshbon, hold on to the accounting as we go through. So Erwin, I know you'll like this. You like accounting, you like these kind of things. So oh, he starts from the bottom up.
What do you want to buy with your refund?
What am I have to buy my refund? Very good.
Then
Moshe, there's a topic that I called you about on the phone after the share last week that we agreed I should bring
Oh, yes. My grandfather had a good question from last week, which I forgot what the question was, but I remembered I thought it was a good question. So, Zadie, can you remind us what your question was from last week's Gemara?
Why give lashes when the only punishment is kares? If he repents and God does not punish him, why should the earthly court punish him? The Torah lays out punishments for specific offenses, and it delineates the punishments imposed by the earthly court and those imposed by the heavenly court. If Hashem decides that he is going to forgive somebody if he repents, and we don't know whether that person's going to be forgiven or not forgiven, it's up to Hashem. Why are we imposing a punishment?
Okay, Zay, great. So my grandfather's question is, last week when we learned the Shita of Rabbi Akiva is the Shita of our Mishnah, who says that you can't get death penalty and Malchus at the same time. Why? Well, the idea that we went through different ideas of why that was true, but essentially what it comes down to is the reason I could get, though, Kares and Malchus, divine excision and Malchus, is because Kares is left up to God, and Malchus is left up to the heavenly court. And so we said that Mises Beis Din, the Beis Din can't forgive you. If Beis Din sees you're very remorseful, they still got to give you the death penalty anyway. Whereas if God sees you're remorseful, God knows everything. He has all the factors, all the data, and he can make that decision to not give you the punishment that you originally deserved. So, right, so my Zadie's question is that we said when it comes to Kares and Malchus, you could get Kares and Malchus. Why? Because Kares is forgivable. God might forgive it. So the question then being is mimanav shach? If God doesn't forgive me, then I shouldn't be getting Malchus because I'm already getting Kares. If, however, God does forgive me for Kares, then I shouldn't be getting Malchus because I've been forgiven. My tshuva has been accepted. So what he was saying, my grandfather is saying is, mimanav shach, either way you slice it, either I am getting karis and therefore I don't get mugs, kimlev deramine, or if my repentance was really accepted and I'm not getting karis, I shouldn't be getting malchus either because my sin has been forgiven. So that's the that was the question my grandfather asked. Henry, looks, did you want to say something here?
No, I'm thinking ahead.
The Malchus would absolve you of the right. Oh, right. Toward the end of the Masechta, you're saying we have right. We have to tie that one in here somehow. That's a good one. No, that's good. That's good. Right. We have to tie it in because this discussion, Henry points out, comes back toward the end of the Masechta. So you're saying right there, Malchus could actually be in lieu of Karis in certain instances. All right, I have to do some chazar myself, and I remember vaguely the discussion, but my chazar has not gotten me there just yet. Okay, so that's the question from my grandfather. Kasha sometimes better than the Teretz. Let's leave it at that because we got some ground to cover. So Zadie, thank you for remembering to share that. Okay, so last week we dealt with Rabbi Shmuel, who says that you could get the death penalty amongst at the same time. And we also address Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, who says you can only get Karis and Malchus at the same time, but you can't get the death penalty in Malchus. And then we had a third opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak, however, we never actually elaborated on until today. Rabbi Yitzchak said, actually, I don't even need to remind you, the Gemara actually recaps it right here. So for those following inside, we are four lines from the top of Yud Dalet Amin Aleph, four lines from the top of 14a. Rabbi Yitzchak Omer, Chayve Krisus Bechlal Hayu, Ulama Yotzus Kares Bachoso, Lodono Bechares Velo Bemalkus. So Chayve Krisus, we establish, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, it basically there's an additional mentioning. We already learned previously that someone who has incest with his sister, they get karis for it. But then the Torah later on again tells us that you get karis for committing incest with your sister. And so the question is, why does the Torah need to tell that to me twice? We have an extra, a superfluous mentioning of the punishment. I already know that. Comes along Rabbi Yisrael and says, what's this verse coming to tell me? The pasuk is coming to tell me that I get kares to the exclusion of all else. I get kares to the exclusion of Malchus. And that's what, it's not just for incest with one sister, but actually it's a binyanav, it's a paradigm for all of these different cases that we are going to deal with, that it's limited to kares, but you only get kares, you don't get Malchus along with it. Okay, great. Now, hopefully we're prepared for this. What are we going to have to ask now? Well, V'Rabbanan, and by the way, when we say Rabbanan in the Gemara, it refers to Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, meaning the majority position is the Rabbanan, those who learned that you could get Karis and Malchus. The question is going to be, V'Rabbanan, Karis Bachoso, Lamali. So the question is, if they're not coming to the same conclusion as Rabbi Yitzchak, they don't use that verse to tell me Karis to the exclusion of Malchus, then, well, wouldn't they also agree there's a superfluous mentioning of kares in a verse? So how are they going to interpret it then? So they use it lechalek. What's that mean? Lechalek. Uch the Rabbi Yochanan, Dam Rabbi Yochanan, Shem Osam Kulam Behelim Echad Chayev Al Kol Achas VaAchas. Let's say so. A helim, this comes up in Shabbos a lot also. Helim basically is just a period of time where I am not aware of what I'm doing. It's one period of unawareness. So in Hilchos Shabbos, this comes up. You have a question of, I commit multiple malachos in one helim. What's the din there? And so similarly over here, if one commits multiple sexual sins, then one should know that you are actually chayiv, you are culpable and held accountable for each and every one. So that would mean, of course, if someone did it mistakenly, it's a helim after all, then they would have to bring a karban for each and every one to atone for each of these individual sins. And that's what the Rabbanan, that's what they use that extra verse of, why did it have to specify kares again for one sister? To tell me that for each and every kind of arayos that I commit of sexual sins, I am held accountable. Wonderful. But now the game of ping pong ensues. Rabbi Yitzchak lechalik minole. Well, Rabbi Yitz, this is a very much a agreed upon principle in halacha that you be held culpable for each and every time, each and every person that you commit that sin with. So then the question is, Rabbi Yitzchak now has to find a verse because they're using Rabbi Yitzchak's previous verse. Now Rabbi Yitzchak has to find another source to back this up. So minale, where does he know it from? Nafkale, he derives it. Now he has to bring in an additional verse from Miva El Ish Val Isha Vinidas Tumasa. So now he's bringing in a verse where there's an additional mentioning of Isha. So because there's a superfluous mentioning of the word Isha, it didn't need to say Isha. We know that Anida is talking about a woman already. Only women can be Nidas. Men cannot be Nidas. Won't comment on what goes on today. So lechayev, I'll call Isha v'Isha. So Rabbi Yitzchak derives from there that you be chayev on each and every woman. I'll just turn down the volume if possible. V'Rabbanan. Melissa, just turn down the volume. The volume on your phone is. I think you're locked. I think.
It was you.
Yeah. I can hear myself. I don't like hearing myself. okay. You're just. Oh, it's closed. Okay. Okay. Wonderful. Okay. Wonderful. Shkoach. Okay. Welcome. So, Rabbanan. Okay. So, now the question is as follows. Get back right into it. So, Rabbi Yitzchak uses the additional mentioning of the word Isha to tell me, and actually it fits very nicely, that every individual Isha, every individual woman who I am forbidden from having intimacy with, I will be held accountable. Great. But now, Rabbi Yitzchak just introduced a new pasuk. And he pointed out, rightfully so, that there's a superfluous word of Isha in that next pasuk. So you know what we got to do now? What did the Rabbanan do with that? So Rabbanan nami tevuklei. So what are they? The Rabbanan also have, do they also, they should also make use of this pasuk, right? Sein hachinami. Actually, you know what? They do use this verse as the proof text to tell me that I'm chayev on each and every individual I commit a sexual sin with in one helling. So then if they're going to use this verse, velakaris da'choso lamali, then why do I need that initial verse of the additional mentioning of kares? What are we? So now they're using the superfluous mentioning of Isha to tell me I am chayim on each and every woman. But what are they now using? The original verse that started this discussion, the additional mentioning of achoso, of a sister having kares. So maybe to teach me something else. Lechayvo alachoso Balchos Aviv, Balchos Imo. This is going to be fun. So if somebody commits a sexual sin of incest with someone who is considered his sister, his father's sister, and also, sorry, with his sister, and then he, right now in the Gemara, thinks, first with my sister, then with my father's sister, and then with Achos Imo, with my mother's sister. But the Gemara says, Pshita, Ari Gufim Muchlakin. We already know that. We know that if you commit a sexual sin with woman A, and then, you know, with Rachel, and then with Leah, and then with Zilpah. So if you're committing all the sins with individual separate women, it makes sense that I'm chayiv for each and every individual I commit a sin with. So, Ela lechayvo alachos shiachos aviv, shiachos imo. So what's it coming to tell us? Sorry. Rather, what is the chiddush? What is this verse coming to tell us? A case where there's only one. Listen, this is a crazy case, by the way. This is again, Rashi of Rashi. Oh, yeah. I tried, and then like you need like a three-dimensional family tree. It's ridiculous. I tried mapping it out, but I'll explain why what Henry's talking about in a moment. So you commit a sin with a woman who has actually just one woman, but with three statuses. What are those three statuses? She's your sister, she's your father's sister, and she's your mother's sister. Now, there is a riddle for you guys. Can you think of a case where you could have forbidden intimacy with one individual woman, yet she is your sister, your father's sister, and your mother's sister? I'm going to wait for someone to figure it out. You gave me a whole eternity. I'd be too confused to figure this one out. Well, Rashi explains it also, and you'll tell me if I do get him. The Rifa actually, I think, has an alternative approach, but let's just suffice with Rashi. So v'hechi mishkachas la, where do we find such a crazy, absurd case? Barishia barishia, the case of a Rasha, the son of a Rasha. A wicked person, the son of a wicked person. Now, that doesn't really answer anything, you know, like, shkoyach, a wicked person, the son of a wicked person. What is that supposed to mean? So for those who have Rashi with you, we need to look at Rashi for this. Rishia bar Rishia. So those who are following along in Rashi, here's what happens. And again, Henry is absolutely correct. You need a family tree. I attempted to start drawing a family tree, and I failed to draw it properly. So are you looking for the place? We're Yudalana 14a and kind of in the middle of the page. Rashia bar Rashia is what you're looking for. To the second power. Okay. So Sakrashi. Haba al Imo. So you have one person, you have Reuven, who has relations with his mother. All right, so this is Russia number one. Russia number one has relations with his mother. Vaholid shte banos, and he produces two daughters from this union with, so right, let's say two, just for argument's sake, two twin daughters come from this union of the son with his mother. V'chazar uba achis mehen, and then if that wasn't bad enough, he then has relations with one of his daughters slash sisters, right? They're his sisters because they are same mother, but they're also his daughters because he produced them through his mother. And then from there, it gets even worse. Beholid ben, and then they have a child from that union. So now you have the second Russia is the child produced from this union of him committing incest with his sister slash daughter. And then this son, following his wicked father's ways, ubaha ben alachos imo. And then this son then has relations. Let's say the two daughters' names were Rachel and Leah. So I have to find better names for that. We shouldn't use Rachel and Leah for this, but you get my point. So if he is Rachel's son, he then has relations with Leah. What does that mean? Shehi achoso vachos aviv. So essentially, he's basically violating three statuses at the same time. And let's go through all of them.
Years of
pregnancy. Yeah. No. Growing up. So by same time means that by the end of the day, this woman who the son of the Russia is having relations with will actually have all three sister statuses, but contained with her and her at the same time. And let's go through and explain how. So the way she is considered, oh wow, I'm already confused myself. Okay, let's go through it. So remember, she is his sister. I need to map myself, Henry, you're correct. Basically what happens is because of this whole entire crazy relationship, she winds up being considered all three at the same time, because what this guy is doing is he's having relations with his aunt. Yes. Right. Exactly. It's his sister because they share the same father. So it's his sister from his father, and then also from the sister of his mother, because Leah is Rachel's sister, and it's a full sister also because we gotta work that out. Basically, this absurd case essentially leads to his sister also because they share the same father, so it's considered his sister as well. So it's his sister, it's his mother's sister, and it's his father's sister all at the same time. Okay, yeah, you're like right. We need like a three-dimensional graph for it. I remember I tried mapping it out, and it just like didn't work on paper. Maybe like a lack of capabilities on my part. Anyway, this absurd case again. Let's just run through it one more time, just so we know what we're talking about here. Again, Reuven has a child with his two daughters with his mother. Then he has a daughter with one of his daughters. Son with one of his daughters. The son then has relations with the daughter who is not his mother, so with his aunt. And what results from there is that it's his sister, his father's sister, and his mother's sister all at the same time. That's what happens. That is an absurd case. I hope to God it never happened and never will happen. But why do we bring this all in? It's a beautiful case of where in the Gemara we do abstract thinking. We bring in radical cases to prove a principle. The point is that this drasha, what the rabbis are using, the drasha of having the additional mentioning of kares when talking about having incest with one sister, is to tell me, even if she has all three, all these multiple statuses, I will be chayiv for each and every one nonetheless. I would think I only committed one sin with one woman, but in fact, I committed three sins at the same time with one woman who has three statuses that aser me to her. That is what Rishia Bar Rishia is. And had we not had any Mefarshim, we just read Rishia Bar Rishia in the Gemara, it would have taken me an eternity and a half to figure that one out.
I think this is because of the style of the Gemara is that it teaches the extremes on all ends. And if you know the extremes, then you will understand everything in the middle, which is where you normally find factual situations. However,
Absolutely. However,
I noticed that in ordinary American conversation, I assume it's the same in other languages, that words are repeated not to teach something new, but to put emphasis on what was previously said.
So Zadie, actually, your point, so my grandfather is asking it, or pointing out rather, is that in regular conversation, many times we repeat words due to emphasis. And so Zadie, what this comes back to actually is a machlokes we talked about, I think maybe a month or so ago. We talked about whether Dibra Torah V'Lashem Kalashem B'nai Adam, where was it? It was, wasn't that long ago, I believe. We had it on. Wow, maybe it was a while ago. Anyway, we had this discussion a while back where there were different ways to darshan a pasuk. And basically, you could come out with two different interpretations. Essentially, we had an extra word in a pasuk. If anyone remembers what that word was. And the question was, is this really an extra word? It depends. If we believe the Torah speaks similar to the way a human being speaks, then we could disregard that word not as being superfluous, but being there for just emphasis due to the way human beings talk. However, we in most cases assume that any word that's not necessary is there for the purpose of drush, for us to derive some kind of principle. But yes, so your point's well taken. And I think it's contingent on a dispute in the Gemara that we learned a while back. And if anyone remembers precisely, it wasn't that long ago. So if anyone remembers precisely which daf we did that on, you will remind me. Okay. I'm just quickly turning the pages, hoping I'm going to spot it. But I don't want to take too much of everybody's time. So let's go on. Okay. So now the Rabbanan, they know the case of Rishia Bar Rishia from the original pasuk talk that had the additional mentioning of kares for his sister. But again, the issue is Rav Yitzchak already used that pasuk. So where does Rav Yitzchak know that there is an isser, actually three isser might violate at the same time with the same woman. Where does he derive the principle of Rashia Barashia, since he's already utilizing that pasuk that the Rabbanan use as their proof text? So going forward, Rabbi Yitzchak Aminale, where does he know it from? Nafgale mikavachomer. He says, I don't need a pasuk. I can use a kavachomer. I could derive it logically. How so? He quotes a brisa. D'tanya amar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said, Sha'altias Rabbi Gamliel v'Rabbi Yeshua be'itlish shel imum. I met up and I asked Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua in this place. Shaholchu likach behema l'mishta b'no shel Rabbi Gamliel. They were in the middle of going about their day, and they were purchasing a cow for the suda, for presumably a wedding or a shev brachos, but presumably a wedding of Rabbi Gamliel's son. And I asked them a question. You know, you see sometimes, you know, some chashuv Rosh Yeshiva, they're going about their day. You know, eventually they have to take care of some errands for their wives. They can't force them to do everything. So, you know, they finally get to do some errands. And then all of their yeshiva bachrim swarm them with questions while they're trying to take out the garbage. So this is basically what's happening over here. Haba al choso. Oh, good. I got one laugh from it. So haba al choso, shehi achos aviv, shehi achos imo, mahu. So our case, where someone has relations with a woman who is his sister, his father's sister, and his mother's sister. What is the din? Eino chayiv al kulon ela achas, o chayiv al kul achas va'achas. Do I only violate one? Am I only culpable of one punishment? Or have I violated three separate isurim at the same time and will thus be held accountable for them? Amrulo, they responded to me, Zolo Shimanu, we never heard of this crazy case. We're never going to hear this idea of Rashia Bar Rashia. What, you learn Maka sometime? So we never heard of such a case. At least practically, they never heard of such a case. Al Shimanu, but lo aleinu, they heard of this case. Of Abba Achamesh Noshim Nidos Behelim Echad. Shechayiv Akol Achas Va'achas. But something we actually we are aware of, is a case where someone in one Helim managed to have relations with five women who were nidos at that time. And we figured out halakhically that he would be held accountable for each and every act with each and every woman that he committed, even in one Helim, even in one period of time where he was unaware of what was going on or unaware of the sin, whatever it might be. Benir dvar mi kal v'chomer. And so it would seem that we can make a kal v'chomer from this. Uma nida shihi sheim echad chayev al kol achas v'achas. Here, where there's five women who are nidas, I only violated really one isser in the Torah. I only violated the isser of having intimacy with a woman who is a nida. Yet, I am held accountable five times for only violating really one sin. I violated one sin in the Torah five times. But I would think to say, look, I violated one sin five times, but it was one category I violated within one period of unawareness, within one helling. Yet, even though I think I should only be chayav once, comes along the pasuk and tells us, come along the rabbanim and tell us that I am held accountable each and every single time with each and every woman. So, what can we say? Kan, sheshlosha shemos, lo kol shegein. Here, where someone commits incest with a woman who has three issues. A, she's your sister. B, she's your father's sister. C, she's your mother's sister, which are three separate categories of Isurim, three unique violations in the Torah. Certainly, I should be held accountable for each and every one. Therefore, with that kal v'chomer, Rabbi Yitzchak says, I don't need a pasuk to tell me the case of Rashia bar Rashia, that I am chayiv, I'm held accountable for each and every sin contained within this one deed, but rather I can deduce it logically through a kal v'chomer. But I'll ask you, for those who didn't look at the next line of Gemara yet, what is the, I'd like to say, almost obvious issue with this kal v'chomer? what seems to be lacking in the analogy, within the extrapolation? What seems off? Okay, Henry, I know you looked ahead already. You could tell us.
No, I'm looking right now.
Okay.
I don't understand.
Okay, so I'll tell you. So the Edoch, what would, you know, again, it's a question on the Rabbanah, because the Rabbanah, they use a pasuk to figure out Rishia bar Rishia.
Why don't they use a Kal V'Chomer?
Right? They should write. Why, if I can figure out some of the Kal V'Chomer, I shouldn't need a pasuk. God wouldn't give me an additional word in the Torah for something I could figure out logically on my own. God only would give us an extra, seemingly superfluous word in the Torah if I wouldn't be able to figure out logically. So the Ida, Kal V'Chomer, Pirchahu. This Kal V'Chomer is not as airtight, ironclad, and purely logical as one might think. This is a faulty Kal V'Chomer. It's fallacious. Why? Malinita Shechen Kufin Muchlakin. What is a svara I could say why I'm chayiv each and every time? I'm chayiv five times for having intimacy with five women who are nidas? Because what we have here are gufin muchlakim. Yes, it might only be one category of sin I'm violating, but I violated it with five separate individuals. Whereas in the case of Rishia bar Rishia, yes, technically she has three statuses. Each and every one would forbid her to me. But at the end of the day, I only had forbidden intimacy with one woman. So I can't make a Kal V'Chomer and say, because I'm culpable each and every time for each and every need a woman, I should be culpable those three times for with that one woman. I only was with one person, not with five. So this is a faulty Kal V'Chomer. There's a reason why the case of Nida of five women would be have more of a reason for me to say that I am culpable multiple times. Therefore, the Rabbanan need a pasuk to tell me I'm chayiv three times for Rishia bar Rishia, and they can't use the Kal V'Chomer. Well, okay. Ping pong ensues. Great. That's such a good pircha. What's Rabbi Yitzchak going to do with that? Right? How would Rabbi Yitzchak respond to such a pircha, to such a faulty in his Kal V'Chomer? Uli Edoch, Nami Havadei Kal V'Chomer Pircha. You know what, Rabbi Yitzchak? We're going to throw it all away right now. Forget it. You're right. I have to concede at some point. This is a faulty Kal V'Chomer. However, Ela Nafgale, but you know what? I've got another pasuk up my sleeve. You know, it's like a pyramid scheme of sukkim. You know, you gotta keep like finding another pasuk. It's like a arms race over here, it feels like. So Ela Nafgale, I'm going to introduce a new pasuk into the equation. Me'achoso disseifa. So originally we had a verse which had a seemingly superfluous mentioning of kares punishment, which we knew already. Now we're going to pick apart that verse and find additional words in there that seem superfluous, and I can use as a basis for a drasha. Ela nafgale me'achoso disseifa. So for those that have the Torah HaShalem on the side of your Gemara, you just look. It says at the end of the first verse in Torah HaShalem, Vayikra Perachah Pasuk in Zion 2017, it says, V'nichrisu leinei b'nei amam, Ervas achoso gila avono yisa. So it says ervas achoso. It did not need to say the erva of his sister, because the pasuk very clearly is already discussing someone committing incest with his sister. It already actually says achoso earlier in the verse. It said earlier in the pasuk, but actually I didn't want to say that, Henry, because actually the Gemara very soon is going to say that the original achoso in the verse also is superfluous. So because as you see, it says in the verse, Isha sheikach es achoso bas aviv, o bas imo. Once it already says the daughter of his father, we know by definition, my father or mother's daughter is my sister. So why do I have to say achoso? So actually that's why I didn't want to say that, but you are correct at this stage of the Gemara. So what Rabbi Yitzchak does is Elanafkei Me'achoso DeSeifa. Why did God have to say sister? Put the word sister into the Torah at the end of the verse. It's very clear from the beginning of the verse that we're talking about one sister. So therefore, that superfluous word of Achoso comes to teach us the case of Rishia bar Rishia. Okay, great. But now the Rabbanan have some answering to do. What do they do with this extra word of Achoso at the end? Virach achoso de seva lamali. Why do I need the latter mentioning of achoso, of sister, at the end of the pasuk? Lechaivo al achoso bas aviv ubas imo lomar sheino shemin adin. So what they use it for is, and we actually learned this earlier in Makos, a long time back. It only says in the Torah, by the way, one should not have incest with the sister from the daughter of his father or the daughter of his mother. It doesn't say in the Torah, exactly, half sisters. It doesn't say the daughter of my father and mother. It doesn't say a full sister. So now you would think to say, kal v'chomer, if committing incest with a half-sister is prohibited by the Torah, then kal v'chomer, committing incest with my full sister is certainly punishable by the Torah, right? That'd be logical. The issue is that we have a principle of ein onshin min hadin. Ein onshin min hadin means basically you're not allowed to make a kal v'chomer to introduce a punishment. To introduce some sort of punishment that Beis Din can mete out. Now, why would that be so? Possibly because you know how we just had a kal v'chomer and then we rejected the kal v'chomer because we found a little bit of a fault in there. You know, initially when Rabbi Yitzchak came up with that kal v'chomer, he's like, "I got an iron tag kal v'chomer. We're good to go." Someone came up later and found a reason to disprove the kal v'chomer. Imagine if we figured out a kal v'chomer. And we said, whatever it was, kal v'chomer, we see that really you wouldn't have been put to death. But in the end of the day, we see that through this kal v'chomer, we can logically deduce that what you just did is deserving the death penalty and will put you to death. So, and then imagine later on, we find a pircha in that kal v'chomer. And we're like, whoopsie daisy, turns out it's not a good kal v'chomer. And really, Johnny should not have gotten the death penalty. Too little, too late, right? You know, you hear these cases, unfortunately, not so much in capital punishment in the United States. You hear these cases where people get incarcerated for most of their life, and then only later on they found out it was someone who was, his doppelganger who, murdered that person or raped that person over there. You know, you see these cases come up every now and then. So, like, imagine, it doesn't say in the Torah that you get capital punishment for something, but we deduce based on logic to give you capital punishment. And then we find out later on there's a pircha in it. Oh my God, like imagine the ramifications of that. So using a kal v'chomer is very dangerous, very much for the reason we just saw in the Gemara, that you could always find a pircha for a kal v'chomer. You can find a reason to disprove something. So now it might be tempting for us to say, if I get kares for committing incest with my half-sister, kal v'chomer with my full-sister. But imagine if we found a pircha to that, the ramifications of that later on. So that's one of the rationales for why we say ein onshin min hadin. We do not use kal v'chomers to impose new punishments on people. Now, it happens to be, it's possible, if I remember correctly, ein onshin min hadin might only be for something like malchus or capital punishment, but it's possible it doesn't apply to monetary matters. And anyone know why?
Money can always be repaid.
Very good. So Judd and my grandfather said a bevas achas at the same time. And that's how edus work, right? You guys both come in at the same time and say you're edus. So yes, because money arguably is reversible. If a fine was imposed upon me, I had to pay restitution to you on the basis of a kal v'chomer. Worst case scenario, in the end of the day, I could get that money back. It's reversible. The stakes. Now, I know you could say, I would have used that money for a down payment on a house. I would have used it to, obviously, like if someone's really tight financially and use a kal v'chomer, of course, crazy things could happen. But in general, money is reversible. So it's possible ein onshin min hadin might be limited in scope. It's a great sugya, one that I haven't actually reviewed thoroughly in a while. But I realize now looking at this, maybe it's something I'll share next time. Okay.
But money is, not necessarily reversible. I once went to an appellate judge and got a stay of enforcement of a judgment pending the appeal because of my client's house was sold to satisfy a judgment. Number one, the money would be spent. How is he going to get his money back? And number two, somebody else already owns the house. He'll never get his house back.
Right. It's, and of course, in halacha, when we talk about we talk about, you know, the difference between karka and metaltalin. So, you know, karka, like I think in American law also, there's an idea that you have a lien on immovable material versus chattel, which is something that's metaltalin, something that's movable, which is, I think, I understand is harder to put a lien on. Okay, so, and what does this relate to? We actually went through this in one of our first weeks, because we talked about Adam Zomerman. And we had a question. Remember when we talked about Adam Zomerman, our good old friends, the Adam Zomerman from the first parak, they're making a comeback now. Adam Zomerman, when are they chayiv? They're in that, has to be in that sweet spot when after the verdict was given, but before the sentence was carried out. So when can I find a case like that? When there's capital punishment, when there's malchus. But some of Farshim say, Tosos and many others point out, they believe that when it comes to a monetary dispute, when the Eim Zomin are lying about a monetary, a financial matter, there's never a Gmar Din. There's never a time where they actually carry out the sentence. There is an Gmar Dino. The verdict will be given, but the verdict will never be carried out because money is always reversible. Despite, I know, Zadie, some of your experience in court, money in general, we assume, is reversible. So some say there never is that bookend for Adam Zomerman when it comes to monetary matters. Adam Zomerman could always be found accountable even at a far later stage because, you know, when someone dies, someone gets malchus, you can't take that back. Money is never truly over. And therefore, similar idea with Eino and Shemina Din, I think it all ties into that idea that money is reversible. Okay. So why did we get into all this? Okay, we went down the rabbit hole a little bit, but I think it was worth our time. So why do we bring this all in? Let's get our heads back into the sugya. I should learn better for next time. I should say that for the end rather than take us off course. So we said the idach achos of the sefer lamali. So what do the rabbanon do with the extra word of sister of achos on the pasuk? Lachayv achos of bas avi bas imo. And again, lomar shein on shemin adin. So it's to tell me that I would have thought logically that if I'm chayiv for incest with my half sister, kal v'chomer with my full sister, the truth is ain on shemin adin. You can't use the kal v'chomer to teach a punishment. And therefore, the rabbis needed the additional mentioning of sister in the pasuk. What kind of sister does the Torah mean to include? Your basic sister, your full sister. That's why, and you know, it's not just a superfluous word, but here it actually, the implication seems to include another sister. Very good. The issue is, v'idach, what's Rav Yitzchak do with the extra word of achos on the pasuk now? Sorry, where does Rav Yitzchak, where does Rav Yitzchak learn this principle that a full sister gets yuchayiv as well? So we have two approaches. Iboy seima, gemar onesh me azhara. So remember that there's two kinds of psukim in the Torah when it comes to these matters. There's an azhara, which is a verse that tells me that I may not do something, I'm not allowed to do something. And then there's the onesh, which is, it could be in a separate verse, that will tell me what the punishment is if I do that. So for instance, in Vayikra, in one parak, we have all the asharos for the arayos, where it says, you know, don't commit this sin, don't commit incest, don't commit adultery, whatever it might be, right? We read it on Yom Kippur. And then later on, in ensuing parak, was it Chaf Beis, I believe? In ensuing parak, when we list the arayos shortly thereafter, those psukim tell us the punishment for the arayos. So here's what's going on here. Maybe gamar onesh me azhara, because the azhara actually has them, designates them. So actually, they spell it out. So it's possible over here, since in the case of the azhara, we talk about a full sister, then in the case, even though an onesh, it doesn't explicate that you would be chayiv for committing incest with a full sister. Maybe in the pasuk that tells me what I'm not allowed to do, since it mentions a full sister, it doesn't need to tell me a full sister again when it tells me the punishment for committing a sin with someone who's my full sister. So maybe one suggestion is gomer onish me'asar. Yes, generally we don't say enosh min adin. Generally we can't make kal v'chomers, but here we already have a scriptural basis where it says that you cannot commit incest with your full sister. Later on, when it talks about the punishments, it doesn't again explicate one's full sister. We already know from the original Azhara who I'm not allowed to commit incest with. It doesn't need to explicate each and every category when it discusses the punishments later on. That's one suggestion. However, we give another one. An additional suggestion is Nafkale Meachoso Duresha. And Henry, this is what we're getting to from before. Maybe what are we going to do now? We're going to bring in, Yitzchak is going to bring in another superfluous mentioning of one sister in the verse. Where's that? For those looking in the verse again, in the Torah Shalom, the first one, it says, V'ish asher yikach esachoso, a man who will take his sister, Bas Aviv, the daughter of his father, Obas Imo, or the daughter of his mother. Again, I'm not the biggest Talmud Chacham in the world, but I'm pretty certain, by definition, if you are my father's daughter or my mother's daughter, that makes you my sister. So why then did the Torah have to say Achoso in there? Maybe the Achoso de Resha comes to tell me that I violate incest even with a full sister. So that's what he uses it for. Very good. And now the ping pong is not quite at the conclusion yet. The question springs back to the Rabbanan. What do you say to this? See, for the Rabbanan, the question now is, what do they make of this additional mentioning of Achoso, the superfluous mentioning of Achoso at the beginning of the Pasuk? So the Yidach, Ahumi Voile, Lechalek, Kores, Limifatem. I think I scratched out the word over there. Oh, okay, yeah. I penciled in over there. That was weird. Right. So Limifatem Ulisach. So the two issues. One is, again, we actually talked about this at the beginning of the parak, where if I concoct, I take, the ketores, for instance, the incense, or I take the oil that was used in the Beis HaMikdash, and I replicate the exact same mixture / recipe that they used, there's a violation of replicating something that was used in the temple for basically non-temple purposes. And so there's one issur of replicating the original oil that was used, or the Shemen HaMishka, the anointing oil. And then Ulasach, and then also for actually using the original anointing oil. So there was an original oil, we learned this before, that Moshe Rabbeinu had, and each and every generation of Kohanim Gedolim, whoever's new Kohen Gadol, they would anoint that Kohen Gadol with that original oil from Moshe Rabbeinu. That oil, unfortunately, became lost. And that's why in the second chapter, in the second parak, we talked about there's a Kohen Gadol who was anointed with Shemen HaMishcha, and there was a Kohen Gadol who was anointed by having begotten, by being given the additional vestments of the Kohen Gadol. So there's basically, I would think, if I replicated the oil, or if I used Moshe Rabbeinu, if I somehow, I was a great archaeologist, I found Moshe Rabbeinu's original oil, you would think I would preserve it, if I'm an archaeologist, but I just decided I had hands that were really dry. I want to put some oil on it. That's what I did as a bad archaeologist. So if I did both in one helem, I would think I only violated one isser. I only have to bring one carbon if I did it by mistake. Comes along the additional word of achoso and tells me I violate two isser. Now, this is something a little bit weird, by the way, because usually, right, until now, whatever superfluous words we found, we're talking about sexual sins. And so we used it to tell me something additional about the laws of Arayos that I didn't know until now. So this is apparently one of the principles that we say in Rabbi Shmuel in the morning. Where's it? Rashi has it over here. But basically, if something is not relevant for the Inyan it's mentioned in, then we have to use it for another Inyan, for another idea. So you basically are fresh out of ideas of what to use this for in the Parsha of Arayos, in the Parsha of sexual sins. I guess the rabbis couldn't figure out any more prohibitions for us. Don't ask me why. I mean, we're pretty good at finding those stuff. So rather, this additional word doesn't come to be mechalik, doesn't come to distinguish and tell me I'm liable each and every time I commit a sexual sin, but rather it's used for another area of the Torah that Chazal figured out in their infinite wisdom, which is in the laws of the oils of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, very good. Just work with me on that premise. I know it is a little bit weird, but that is how it works. So the Idach Savar, so what's Rabbi Yitzchak? Where does Rabbi Yitzchak figure this out from? Rabbi Elazar Amar Rav Hoshaya, Domar Rabbi Elazar Amar Rav Hoshaya, Komak Shata Motze Shnei Lavin Ukaris Echad, Chaluk and Hain LeKarban. He just simply says, I don't need a verse to teach me this idea. Because again, Rabbi Yitzchak already used the initial mentioning of Al-Choso for his own purposes. So where does he learn the idea that I'm chayv each and every time for either concocting the oil or using the oil for the Beis HaMikdash? So he says, again, he's trying to end this ping pong match, all right? He's like, I don't need to bring an additional verse. I could learn it from a general principle, which is that whenever you have two prohibitions in the Torah, but one mentioning of kares for them collectively, in general, the principle he believes is that you have to still bring two karbanos, so you did both then by mistake. That's one answer. Okay. I guess if you introduce a new principle that conveniently aligns with you, then you can call it a day. But the Gemara doesn't let us off that easy. They say, but wait a minute, there's more. We can give you an additional answer. Maybe he doesn't hold like Rabbi Elazar. Okay, we're bringing in another verse, but don't worry, this is the final one, the final verse we're bringing in. Let's look in the pasuk on the side. So if a man, this is a pasuk that tells us that a man may not have intimacy with a woman who is in nida. So v'isha sher yishkav es isha dava v'gila es arvasa es mekora hara v'higilsa es mekorta meha. So basically all these different ways of saying that he has intimacy with her by revealing her nakedness. V'nichrasu shnehem mikerev amam. And we have an additional mentioning of kares here. So what does he do with this additional mentioning of kares? The additional mentioning of kares isn't used for our current inyan, but rather it's used to tell us the idea that we learned before, that we want to chayav each and every time, whether it be replicating the oil, whether it be using the oil. If you do both at the same in the same helim, you're still held accountable for each and every one individually. Okay, don't worry. We're going to the crescendo. You know what? Let's bring a little bit of Hilchos Nida in here. Why not? Bidach, what did Rabbanan do with this extra mentioning of Kares in the verse? Ahumi Vayile, look at Rabbi Yochanan. They need it to support Rabbi Yochanan's teaching. What we're about to learn actually is a very important principle in Hilchos Nida, which just, you know, coincidentally, as you see here, comes up in Makos. So, you know what? Let me finish the Gemara and then I'll elaborate. So, actually, we need a little bit of background actually just to understand what this is. Okay, very quickly. I know we're almost at the end, don't worry, but very quick background. For blood to be considered Nida blood, so a woman menstruates, and then, according to the Torah, she's Anita for 7 days. Anita halakhically means two things. One, she's Tamei. Number two, she's forbidden to her husband. Now, basically, right, people learn Hilchos Nida, and they think they're learning all about what we call Hilchos Nida, Taras HaMishpacha. I got news for you. There's a reason that, you know, where Nida is in Shas, you're actually learning a lot about Tuma and Tahara. But nowadays, where we don't have a base of Mikdash and we don't really keep all the laws of Tumah Tahara as much, regrettably, so what's happening? Really, we only focus on the second consequence of being a Nina, which is that she's forbidden to her husband. Now, the question that comes up is, what kind of blood renders a woman a Nida? Not all blood that comes out of a woman's vaginal canal constitutes Nida blood. This is very important, because let's say a woman goes to the OBGYN, And during her, you know, just an exam, the different kinds of tests that can be done. And sometimes certain tests, you know, like a pap smear, for instance, my understanding is that because they're slicing off a little bit to do a biopsy, there could be blood that comes out. So many women, when they see blood, they'll you know, rightfully be concerned because they'll think, oh, that's needle blood. Oh, gosh, it's not even my period. And now I'm forbidden to my husband. And imagine, you know, that was just, you know, and imagine her actual period is a good number of days later. So imagine like a full month, she'll be usher to her husband. Because nowadays, depending on your Sephardi or Ashkenazi, it's 11 to 12 days. Don't ask me how we got there. That's for another year. So there's a very important principle when it comes to a woman going for an OBGYN appointment, which is generally we're tola on a maka. We believe, generally, if we have reason to believe that the blood comes from a maka, from a wound, we assume that it's not dam nida, and she's still tahora. So because why? Because the definition of nida blood is not blood that comes from the vaginal canal, but blood that comes from psichas harechem, that comes from the womb opening up, blood that comes from the makor, from the womb itself. But blood that just comes from nicking the vaginal canal, that would not constitute nida blood. Now, where did, you know, I make up, did I just make up this entire principle? Did we just come up with it? No, it's in the Gemara right over here. And this is what the Rabbanan used, the additional mentioning of Kares in the Pasuk for. Thank you. Of why we bring up this additional mentioning here in Hilchus Nida. The Edah, what did Rabbanan use it for? Ahumi Vayale, look at Rabbi Yochanan. Dama Rabbi Yochanan, Mishun Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Where do we know that it has to be derech ervasa? So we learn from here is that the blood needs to come out derech ervasa. If it doesn't come out derech ervasa, you just do a nick somewhere else on her arm or even the vaginal canal. That does not constitute nida blood, and she would not be a nida. That's what the Rabbanan used that final verse for, and that brings us to the conclusion of our learning for today. So again, this was I have my little chart over here. If anyone wants it, I can take a photo. It's in Hebrew, so I mean, for those who will benefit, I'm happy to snap a photo and send it to you. But again, you know, I'll do a very quick review. Actually, if you have a minute, you can stay on. I want to actually run through how we do all the psukim in the end. So, okay, here's the quick summary. If you didn't catch the whole shock of Atara, here is the summary of the entire shiur right here. So here's the cliff notes that I wrote down. Okay, we had a pasuk of Kares. Sorry, gentlemen, just 1 minute if possible. Okay, so we had an additional mentioning of Kares for one sister. What do we use that for? Rabbi Yitzchak uses that to teach us that you get Kares, but without Malkus. The Rabbanan use it to teach us Rishia bar Rishia. Okay, that's pasuk number one. That's what the additional mentioning of Kares for a sister tells us. Then we had the pasuk of El Isha Benidas Tumasa. What do we use that to teach us? Actually, this is the one time that Yitzchak and Rabbanan have a consensus. They both agree it's used L'chalik Arayas Behelim Echad. It's there to teach us that you are chayev for each and every sexual sin you commit within one helling. Okay, and then now drush number three. What is the additional superfluous mentioning of Achoso, one sister, at the end of the pasuk there to teach me? According to Rabbi Yitzchak, he uses that to teach us Rishia bar Rishia. But then what did the Rabbanan use it for? They use that to teach us that you are chayev for the chayev ha'achos bas aviv v'imo, that you're chayev for your full sister in addition to your half-sisters. And then also we have achoso deresha. So what about the superfluous mentioning of sister at the beginning of the verse? So that's to teach us l'chayev, l'chayev al-chos bas aviv v'imo. There it's to obligate. So there we use that to teach us that, right? Yisrael used that to teach us that you're chayiv for your full sister. The Rabbana used that to teach us that you are chayiv a carbon for either concocting oil or for utilizing the oil. You're chayiv for each and every one. To which, right, Yitzchak introduces a final verse of Ish Asher Yishkav, which has an additional mentioning of Kares. He uses that to teach us that you are chayev for the oil, whether it's concocting, whether it's using it. And then the Rabbanan finally uses it to teach us that in order to be a Nida, it has to come out Derech Ervasa. So there's the quick cliff notes. You got the whole Shaka Vitaria in 1 second right over there. And we will now conclude the shir and go to Mecha. Yasher Kalach, everyone. And by the way, not to discourage you from coming to shir next week, but it's like the same thing all over again, just with different psukim. So
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming. Go
ahead. I am you.